And this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of November 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of November 2014. And this week, the extracts have been edited by Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Kate Butler. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. And the main headlines this week are traders wishing for a Christmas cracker, report antisocial student behaviour is the advice, and hunt after graveyard assault. So we have the story behind the first headline, please. Shirley.
Traders wishing for a Christmas cracker. Business leaders and traders in Winchester are hoping for a bumper Christmas with around 400,000 visitors flocking to the city this festive season. Last week saw the opening of the ever-popular Christmas market and ice rink in the shadow of the cathedral, a week after the Christmas lights were switched on. Some 114 exhibitors will showcase at the 60 chalets on site this year, the largest number yet in the cathedral grounds. Winchester has been vying for the crown of England's Christmas capital for the last 4 years, seeing fresh new campaigns pooled together by Winchester City Council and Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, to attract more and more visitors to the city. This year's initiative, The Perfect Christmas, could be the best yet, business leaders hope. Last year saw footfall numbers jump by more than 15% in November and a further 11% year-on-year for December to 358,000 people. This year, the website christmasinwinchester.co.uk has seen record numbers visiting the site. To cope with the huge influx of coaches, Winchester City Council has turned its former site at Bar End into a temporary coach park for the duration of the festive period. It will provide parking for up to 28 coaches at a time. More than 160 coaches have been booked in, with the number set to rise to nearly 200 by the end of December. Councillor Robert Humby, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "Winchester at Christmas is a phenomenal success story. We want to welcome visitors to our city because they provide a big boost to the local economy. By making its former depot site available for temporary coach parking, the City Council is doing its best to help the festivities run smoothly. Security staff numbers have been upped since there is full-time CCTV footage and at the same gated single access point at the close as last year. The cathedral has also organised its own greeters to meet coach parties, and Stagecoach has implemented controllers to work at certain times. For the first time, this year we'll see the parking bays in the middle of the Broadway suspended to allow for easier access for buses, though the taxi rank will still be available. The park and ride bus service will be enhanced during the 5-week period before Christmas, running at 10-minute intervals, and coach parking has been arranged at Hampshire County Council's park and ride site over the weekends. The council is also funding an express service on Sundays at the South Park and Ride, which runs via the M3 to the Broadway, and Winchester BID has funded a Sunday service to the East Park and Ride. Transport and parking teams will liaise with arrivals via radio networks and CCTV to advise where remaining spaces are and update changes as and when on the dedicated parking page on the Council's website. Stephen Gates, Chief Executive Officer for Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, said, "For many traders in Winchester, Christmas is a crucial time of the business year. It really is a joint effort with the focus of the Chamber, Council and BID in promoting a perfect Christmas in Winchester, and local businesses making sure that they're putting on their best offers for new and existing customers. Every effort has been made to ensure Winchester traders have a competitive advantage over rival cities, as well as free park and ride Sunday tickets. Stores close later on Thursdays, and a growing number are taking part in a new click and collect system, which is expected to rise by 82% by 2019. One Parchment Street trader, who asked not to be named, said, "Winchester is not as big as some cities, so it's not overwhelming. And the access into the city means you don't have far to go, like some other larger places, such as Southampton."
Let's have the story behind the second front page headline, please, Noel.
Right. Report antisocial student behaviour. The advice to residents as anti-HMO drive grows. Antisocial behaviour by students in Stanmore will not be tackled unless residents log their problems with police, a meeting between residents and student union officials heard. Petitioners calling on civic chiefs to limit houses in multiple occupation, HMOs, claim the estate is at breaking point, as tensions rise over late-night parties, antisocial behaviour and landlords converting family homes into student digs. One leading campaigner called on Winchester University to kick out persistent troublemakers. Student Union President Naomi Carter held the largely positive meeting last week for locals to discuss steps being taken to tackle the disruption. One resident, who asked not to be named, told the meeting how the students verbally abuse locals, vomit on cars and have sex on her street near Stanmore into the early hours of the morning. "It's not funny," she said. "They're coming out of here drunk along Erskine Road, laughing, joking, screaming, having sex occasionally." This month, the union launched van patrols around Stanmore on popular club nights as part of a series of measures to clamp down on noisy students. Ms. Carter said the union is very proud to host community and charity events, as well as late entertainment, and has won awards for its safety procedures. Union officials and city councillors urged residents to report problems to police, as the council, university and local force cannot tackle antisocial behaviour without hard figures. Between September and November, police received just 2 101 calls relating to student antisocial behaviour in Stanmore. Residents and officials agree this does not reflect the reality. Union manager Andrew Hodgson said bosses could only control problems related to their own events, and many issues come from students walking to clubs and bars in the city centre late at night. After the meeting, campaign leader Amanda Chard said the discussion was really positive, but more residents needed to engage with authorities and the university should offer much more severe punishments to antisocial students. "They should be thrown off their course," she said. "I don't think that's unreasonable. They, the student union, are doing their best." Her petition demands city councillors bring forward a proposed rule forcing landlords to get planning permission before converting houses into HMOs, which are popular with Winchester University students. The clampdown is planned for 2016, but Ms. Chard said the delay would cause a gold rush of investors buying houses to convert into HMOs before the rules come in. The petition, which has more than 300 signatures, will be presented to Winchester City Council at its full meeting on January the 7th.
Let's have the third frontline headline story, please, Jane.
And the third headline is Hunt After Graveyard Assault. An investigation has been launched after a man exposed himself to a woman in a Winchester graveyard and then punched her in the face. People have been urged to walk through West Hill Cemetery in groups after the attack, which happened at 12:45 p.m. on November the 10th. Stanmore PCSO Gavin Cooper told a Police and Communities Together meeting on Monday, "It just goes to show there are individuals out there who don't care what time of day it is. I would steer clear of the cemetery, that's my personal view, if you're alone. If you're in groups, fine." The cemetery is used by students as a shortcut to the university from St James's Lane, but is closed at night. No details of the alleged victim, who was left with minor injuries, were revealed. After the meeting, PCSO Cooper told the Chronicle, "I've not come across anything like that in my years working. Hopefully it's a one-off and we won't see it again." Winchester CID has a few leads on the case, he added, but no suspects have been identified. Sergeant Andy Fisher said, "The victim was left extremely shaken by this incident, and we would urge anyone who saw a man acting suspiciously in the area to contact us. We have been carrying out extra patrols to offer reassurance in the area, and there have been no further incidents of this nature reported."
And that concludes the headline stories. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, historical items, Belgarum Diary, Westminster Diary, First Person, and then Chronicle comment. I'll start with the death notices. Biggs, Hilda May Biggs, peacefully aged 90. Cassidy, Betty Cassidy, aged 94. Coville, Inga Coville, peacefully. Dyke, Morris Dyke, peacefully, aged 93. Etheridge, Doris Joan Patricia Etheridge, aged 84. Gray, Edward George Ted Gray, at the Queen Alexandra Hospital, aged 57. Griffiths, Denise Griffiths, peacefully, at the Old Alsford Cottage Care Home. Hazard, Vera née Spratt Hazard, peacefully aged 90. Heath, Norman Heath, peacefully at the Grange Nursing Home Hedge End, aged 81. Hibbert, Thomas Francis Hibbert, suddenly. Hillier, Myrtle May Hillier, aged 90 after a long illness. Millard, Sheila Edith Millard MBE, peacefully at St Michael's Hospice, Basingstoke, after a long illness. Parry, Raymond Ray Parry, at the Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester. Sergeant, Stanley Henry Stan Sergeant, at the Royal County Hospital, following a brief illness, aged 93. West, Edward Arthur Ted West, aged 92, in Winchester Hospital. And finally, Williams, Peter Reginald Williams, at home in Winchester, aged 75. And now we've got Christian comment read by Shirley.
Right. This is headed Learn the Dangers of Stereotyping, and it's written by Terry E. Hemming. The controversy over the tweet with the photo of the white van with the flags of St. George continues as I write this. I cannot guess what was in Emily Thornbury's mind as she sent it, but since 1997, White Van Man has produced an image and prejudice which conjures up a certain type of person. It was significant that this happened during a by-election where there was a lot of discussion about immigrants. Again, in recent years, that has produced a certain kind of stereotyping. For many, the word Romanian brings to mind the beggars they see near Hyde Park, rather than the classical musicians, philosophers and churchmen whose books are in my study. Some people complain about political correctness, and I can understand their concern, but in its favour it has worked against the portrayal of all people from a particular race, country, class or gender as having one characteristic. When I worked abroad, I was happy to hear people express surprise that I did not meet their expectations regarding some form of negative image they had of the British or English. At the moment, I imagine it must be difficult to be a Muslim from the Middle East without people looking at you suspiciously. In Jesus' time, there were similar prejudices, and so often his story was to upset the apple cart and overturn these ideas. Perhaps the best known example is that of the Good Samaritan. Today, that expression makes us think of someone kind and helpful. That was not what was in the minds of Jesus' first hearers. For them, Samaritan meant somebody who had mixed the true religion with paganism and had been unfaithful to their ancestors. It meant somebody who had compromised it. It meant somebody who should have shunned. Who should be shunned. It meant somebody who could be despised. Jesus' parable of the good neighbour turned that on its head and made the Samaritan the hero of the story, whereas the goodies, the priest and the Levite, who should have been the heroes, were seen in a poor light. Jesus' quarrel with the religious of his time was that they were continually putting people in boxes, labelling them so that they could divide the world into good and bad, in which they belonged to. And those different for them were labelled bad. Whatever our views of today's politics, let us learn the danger of stereotyping and look for what we share with each other and what is positive about our neighbours. I must declare an interest. I do not have a white fan, but I do fly the flag of St. George above the church.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address to the editor is 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 9 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, Pip Billington asks whether the felled trees lead to more M3 noise. Sir, I wonder if other readers have noticed the M3 noise. It is considerably worse after the felling of all the trees in the water meadows. The noise is now a continual presence in Kingsgate Street. Previously, at this time of the year, it could only be heard under certain weather conditions. Does anyone measure it? Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
And now a letter from Catherine Morris. Be brave and seize sporting opportunity. Sir, the rains have arrived. River Park Leisure Centre is at risk of flooding again. The town centre is congested. Access to River Park is a nightmare. The population of Winchester continues to grow in number and in size. Obesity, with its attendant health problems, is an increasing problem. Our university is expanding but has no swimming pool. Winchester desperately needs improved sports and leisure facilities. The Brownfield site at Bar End is the obvious site for this development. Securing this site for sports and leisure facilities is the best way to ensure the open spaces and sports pitches remain on the adjacent garrison ground owned by Tesco. Good sports and leisure facilities accessible to all are crucial to the health of our population. Bar End is accessible by road, bus and cycle, and is equidistant from the bus station in Winchester for pedestrian access. Swimming is the most popular sport in England. A 50-metre pool is a far better community facility to cater for all ages and abilities. It is a safe investment as it offers simultaneous use by different groups, increasing returns, and has the potential to host lucrative competitive events. The University of East Anglia, the K2 facility at Crawley, and the Surrey Sports Park demonstrate the financial success of this type of facility. interest rates remain low, now is the time to invest. This is an opportunity that should not be missed. Councillors are right not to rely on grants, but these should be sought, as should collaboration with the university and private investors. There is opportunity for all. We will have to pay for new sports and leisure facilities, but can we afford not to? Our councillors must be brave and seize this opportunity and put health at the top of the agenda. And that was from Catherine Morris, Carmen's Lane, Compton.
Phil Yates writes this one, which is headed Silver Hill Best Place for City Model. Sir, much publicity has been given recently in the Chronicle of Roger Brown's excellent model of Winchester as it was in the 1870s, and quite rightly so. I hope, after the final day of viewing, with speeches made by the chairman of Hampshire County Council and vice-chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, that between them and the City Council, action will now be taken to find a permanent home for the model. I have known Roger for many years, and he deserves not only thanks from officials and the public as a whole, but also peace of mind in seeing that his labour of love be placed on permanent display for many years to come. If all else fails, surely a space could be found somewhere in the Silver Hill development, preferably in a new bus station. I hold my breath here, where citizens and tourists alike can view the model. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Michael Coker Davis asks, where does MP stand on this issue? Sir, following endless protests and letters of complaint re the development of Silver Hill and the obvious disintegration of communications between City Council and residents of Winchester, I have become increasingly bemused by the lack of commitment or direction from our local MP, Mr. Steve Brine. Having your photo taken at the opening of a local school extension, or pulling a face of deep concern at the location of a serious road accident, is, we all realise, part and parcel of an MP's duties. However, residents of Winchester now want a clear and unambiguous position from Steve Brine as to where he stands on the Silver Hill development. At the time of a general election, people vote bearing in mind both national and local issues. There is no bigger issue within Winchester than the Silver Hill development, which will, for good or for worse, shape much of the city centre for decades, if not centuries, to come. We do not require a rambling cover-all political answer shrouded in vagueisms with a thick cover of fog for good measure, but a clear and decisive answer. Your constituents are now looking at you, Steve, and we have to make up our minds how we are going to vote in the general election next year. It's time to step up to the line. Michael Coker Davis, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
And from Judith Martin, I hope other towns will be watching. Sir, the news on the judicial review over Silver Hill is extremely heartening, but it doesn't make the Winchester March any less necessary. Winchester is attractive and more than averagely well-heeled. Of course developers are eyeing every possible site, and even some officially impossible ones, as plans come forward for Pitt Vale, on top of the perfect storm that is already Silver Hill, Barton Farm, the Recreation Centre, Chesil Street, the Station Area, Pitt Manor, and I've probably missed something out. Central government cuts mean there is simply not the capacity in the council to deal with all this. And even if there were, residents are annoyed at being used as tick-box consultation fodder, while the city moves towards being a ghetto for the privileged. I hope other beleaguered towns and cities are watching. I'm sure Chichester also deserves better, and Salisbury, and certainly, according to recent reports, Barkhamsted and Ely. If enough community groups make enough noise, perhaps government will realise how deeply unpopular recent planning legislation is. So, join us on Saturday the 29th. I've delivered march leaflets to some pretty comfortable areas, but the well-housed need to march for their children and their grandchildren, who are the future of this ancient city. Winchester really does deserve better. And that was Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And also James Kelsey writes in a similar vein. It's headed Extra Care Homes Images Misleading. Sir, I'm writing to draw your attention to the CGI mock-ups that have been presented by Winchester City Council as part of the planning application for the Chesil Street car park development. While I appreciate that these illustrations are designed to show how the new development would look, they are simply not accurate and are, at best, misleading. It would appear that once again the council are trying to dupe us by showing the buildings to be much smaller than they will be should this development go ahead. The evidence for this is demonstrated in the CGI, which shows the existing give way sign in relation to the building and residence. The people and the building are shown to be half the actual size in relation to the give way sign next to them. This therefore means that the development is being shown 50% smaller than it would really be. I think this development is inappropriate for this area on the basis that there are 10 listed buildings on Chesil Street that will be affected, which lies slap bang in the middle of a conservation area. Any changes to the setting of a listed building need to go through listed building consent, and since the car park development is a major change in the area, this has to be considered. The council seems to consistently hide behind their consultants and present us with half-truths through the use of misleading CGIs. I, for one, will be joining the March for Winchester this Saturday, as we seem to have a council who are simply not listening to the people who actually live here. James Kelsey, Chesil Street, Winchester.
And here's another slant on the Silver Hill development from Rupert Pitt. He asks, if they can consult, why not Henderson? Sir, the Silver Hill development has attracted much criticism for the lack of consultation, in particular, the lack of notice of the April consultation and the lack of information provided. The July consultation in the Guildhall had adequate notice, but again, there was no information provided. This contrasts with the enormous development around King's Cross development in London, which is being developed by Argent LLP. This involves 67 acres, 2,000 new homes, of which 50% are affordable, 20 new streets, 10 new public squares, 8 million square feet, 26 acres of public space, and 45,000 people. In Manchester, they developed the Piccadilly area, the Northern Quarter and St Peter's Square, Airport City, and in Birmingham they developed Brindley Place, a mixed-use development. It is a model for urban regeneration. The chief executive of Argent, Roger Madelin, I quote, went around by bicycle talking to 7,500 different people in 355 different meetings. The Silver Hill site is 5 acres and a mere 7.5% of the size of the King's Cross development. If Argent can consult for this large site, why not Henderson and the City Council? Rupert Pitt, Stony Lane, Winchester.
And here we have a response letter from Councillor Rob Humby, who is the leader of Winchester City Council, willing to talk, but we must meet the challenges of our changing city. Sir, as your front page last week told us, this weekend will see a march about a number of major schemes under discussion across the city. As a Democrat, I always welcome such opportunities to hear public opinion. My own view is that the council has done a good job on consulting about matters as diverse as Silver Hill or the station approach area. But I am ready to meet with representatives of any of the groups present to hear how we could do better. What none of us must lose sight of is the bigger picture. I believe all the projects which understandably attract so much interest are vital to the future of our city. The city is growing, with over 2,000 new homes planned or being built. The city centre needs to offer more to those new residents, or they will go elsewhere. And Silver Hill is designed to do just that. We must protect jobs and provide new ones for existing and new residents, or else we will become a commuter suburb. That is why we're looking at the Carfax and cattle market sites to see whether they can meet demands for better business space. As our population ages, so we must meet the needs of older people, which is why I support an extra care housing on the Chesil Surface car park. Many of these projects will give the council a rental income. I make no bones about that. In times of austerity, I want to keep local taxes down. But with government grant dwindling, we must earn money to protect our services. The alternative is a series of cuts which will help none of us. We must, of course, get these projects right. Development must be sensitive and address the concerns of local residents. Consultation is important, but I doubt it will ever lead to consensus. Let us not pretend we can put our heads in the sand or somehow hold back the tides of change. Of one thing I am certain, if we do not respond to the challenges facing our retail sector, local jobs, housing and public services, then the city will decline. I'm sure no one wants that. So I'm happy to meet anyone with concerns, but I don't simply want to hold that things mustn't change. That's not an option. What I would welcome is a constructive dialogue about our collective future. And that was Councillor Rob Humby, leader of Winchester City Council, Colebrook Street.
And Bill Ledbetter says, "It's time for some joined-up thinking, sir. It is clear to me the council does not have a joined-up approach to the various development projects within their control. Glaringly obvious to me is that the Chesil Street development cannot provide safe pedestrian or wheelchair access to the town centre for the community expected to use it. Also clear to me is the irrationality of developing a well-used and preferred car park whilst the multi-storey nearby is underused. Why not develop that? The council has an obligation to provide affordable housing and has been shamefully willing to forego this obligation over the Silver Hill project, notwithstanding recent developments. The Brooks Centre is a failure on commercial, amenity and aesthetic grounds. We need a joined-up public-private transport interchange to accommodate buses, coaches, taxis and parking, not ad hoc bits of each spread around the town. I accept that providing affordable housing within Silver Hill does not maximise the commercial potential for the development. Logically, then, at least some of this could be achieved on a less central site. So why not think bigger and join up the various factors and locate the extended care sheltered housing within Silver Hill, redevelop the multi-storey car park as affordable housing using profit from Silver Hill to finance it, and leave Chesil Street car park as it is, a useful preferred car park. If we need more car parking to encourage town commerce, why not include the whole of the Brooks Centre as part of the development to include a transport interchange and car parking? These could even straddle Friars Gate at high level and provide safe pedestrian access to the shopping areas for car, bus, coach, taxi users. As a side benefit, this would free the Broadway from vehicular traffic, which could be added to the pedestrianised area, thus linking Abbey Gardens to the opened-up watercourses and public spaces of a better-considered Silver Hill development. Bill Ledbetter, Highcliffe Road, Winchester.
And that was the last of our letters to the editor for this week. And now it's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked Do you agree with claims that the council is not listening to residents' concerns? Noel's got the answers.
Yes, from four different people. Catherine Draper, 38, full-time mother of Stockbridge Road, full flood, said, I get the impression that they're not listening. That's especially true with River Park. The protest is really good. People don't see that their voices are being heard. And Peter John Lynch, 54, unemployed of Southgate Street, said, if they want to build something, they're going to build something. They seem to ignore everybody. Councils are ruining small towns. And Rachel Bell, 42, an artist of Peacock Place, Winnall, said, I don't agree with the march. The council has been listening. I think Winchester would benefit from more development. It has to keep up with the rest of the country. It seems Winchester is in its own world. It needs to grow up a bit. And finally, Thomas Lipton, 74, retired of Peach Hill Lane, Crawley. It's just a waste of time. We need to change the council. There's not enough lay people that would be able to use a bit of common sense.
Now we're going back through the mist of time for our historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And two little items from December the 1st, 1989. The first one, unfair burden on Hampshire. Current government policies would see the disappearance of the home counties under housing development. This was Dudley Keep's answer to why Hampshire County Council had sought a 15,000 to 16,000 reduction in the number of houses proposed by the government for Hampshire over the next 10 years. He described the additional 48,000 homes being taken by Hampshire as a handsome contribution, which will take place through controlled growth in the proposed structure plan. What the government was proposing is an unfair burden on Hampshire. That is one of the reasons why we have said enough is enough, because we are suffocating, making life and the quality of life intolerable. And the second little item, growing concern over the future of Hampshire's redundant churches, has been taken up by the County's Buildings Preservation Trust. Speaking at its annual meeting at the Royal Victoria Country Park Chapel in Netley, Mr. Maldwin Drummond, the chairman, announced they would be inviting an ecclesiastical representative to join the Board of Management.
I'll go to Shirley and go back 50 years ago.
And this is from November the 28th, 1964, headed Girls Venture Corps Formed. In an attempt to find the answer to hooliganism, the Girls Venture Corps was formed this year by incorporating two well-known movements, the Girls Training Corps and the Women's Junior Air Corps. At the Abbey House in Winchester on Monday, at the start of recruitment meet week in Winchester, Mrs. M. Lawrence of Goodworth Clatford spoke of the aims and intentions for girls between the ages of 13 and 20 and of the opportunities it offered for the full expression of personality and enrichment of free time.
And 100 years ago, over to you, Noel.
Yes, November 28th, 1914, there's two items, headlined Presence for Those on the Front Line. The first one, an opportunity for the citizens to send a Christmas present to the soldiers connected with Winchester who are serving at the front, has been provided in the form of a gift of chocolate. And Monday next, November the 30th, is to be known as Chocolate Day. Gifts of plain chocolate will be received at Hyde Parish Hall on Monday between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. Money to buy chocolate can be sent to Miss M. Alexander, Danesacre, Worthy Road. I should remind you that was written 100 years ago. And the second item. In connection with the large assembly of troops on the downs to the east of Winchester, the Corn Exchange has been commandeered for the use of the Army Service Corps for the receiving and delivery of stores, mostly saddlery. This will in no way interfere with the outside market. The military have also taken over Mr. Stratton's farm at Chilcombe, including all the buildings except the house, and the whole of the land, all but two paddocks. Much stabling has been taken possession of in different parts of the city.
It's going to take us way back 200 years ago.
200 years ago was November the 28th, 1814. Huh. Session signed by Austria. It was on the 16th of October that Austria signed the cession of the Kingdom of Saxony to Prussia. It has been remarked that for some days past, Prince Metternich has had frequent and long conferences with Lord Castlereagh and Prince Talleyrand. It is said that on the 15th of November an important declaration will be published by the ministers of the great powers. It will contain the substance of the changes which have been decreed for Europe and for Germany in particular. The military force of the new Kingdom of Hanover will be, it is said, exclusive of the guards, 40,000 men. And secondly, Count Noailles, the French minister, has transmitted a declaration concerning Saxony, and it is pretended that by the intervention of Austria, the fate of that kingdom may yet undergo some modifications. The German powers will be indemnified as far as possible in a manner proportioned to the efforts each has made to produce the present happy result. According to the correspondent of Nuremberg, there is an idea of giving Switzerland a king after the example of Holland. It is said even that there is a party in Switzerland that is desirous of establishing this form of government.
And we're back to 2014, and Shirley's got Belgarum Diary for us.
Right. It's headed, Practice in Wake of the Real Thing. Belgarum regrets to inform that firefighters who were lifted onto the roof of Winchester Cathedral last week were not hanging up tinsel for the city's Christmas market. Last Thursday's practice drill saw two men hoisted hundreds of feet up to the summit of the medieval church. "It's just in case we need to stick a ladder up there," one firefighter said. Three engines parked on the green as Hampshire Fire and Rescue honed their response times. In September, 100 people were evacuated from the medieval cathedral while officers located a malfunctioning light which was billowing smoke near the Lady Chapel. And then the second half of this article, headed Guerrilla Gardening on the Agenda. Belgarum was left confused last week when councillors discussed the gardening habits of Wintonians. Prompted by Councillor Helen Osborne, the subject of guerrilla gardening was hotly discussed under the Landscape and Open Spaces item of the Town Forum. Belgarum had visions of large apes armed with secateurs, but for the uninitiated, guerrilla gardening is gardening on someone else's land, such as verges. Winchester Greens did a spot a few years ago at the junction of Worthy Lane and Hyde Street.
Belle's going to move outside Hampshire for a while because she's got Steve Bryan's Westminster Diary.
Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. November is birthday month in the Bryan household, and fun as it unquestionably is, any fellow parent of very young children will know why Susie and I cling on to the briefest respite before the Christmas list campaign begins. Whatever I do this year, something tells me loom bands will feature heavily. There is, of course, a lot of work to be done between then and now, and for me, that includes leading an important debate in the House of Commons on a subject close to our hearts in Winchester, flooding. As I look back at 2014, it was definitely one of the major events of the year, and is something I remain determined we will learn from. My winter flooding preparation debate followed on from my speech in the House earlier this year, and was not solely to moan and highlight the things which went wrong. It is a fact that the response from local authorities and agencies in Winchester back in February was highly effective, and is being studied by many other parts of the country. That, of course, includes the innovative restriction placed upstream of the city in the River Itchen by the Environment Agency, which saved around 100 homes in the Water Lane Park Avenue area from almost certain flooding. The main purpose of my calling the debate, however, was to press ministers for further reform of the Repair and Renewal Grant, RRG, and to highlight a new funding idea which is essential for this area if we are to see tangible flood resilience work undertaken. I and many of my constituents saw personally this year the devastating impact groundwater flooding had in villages such as Kingsworthy, Headbourne Worthy, Littleton and Hursley. I am therefore working really hard to explain to government the wider socio-economic case, which I believe should be taken into account when deciding which areas will receive funding for future flood works. Working alongside the increasingly impressive leader of Hampshire County Council, I am pushing the Pathfinder proposal at every opportunity. It seeks to create a new £4 million devolved funding pot through DEFRA to fund improvements in some of the worst hit places where groundwater is the enemy. Why does this matter and what is the distinction? Because the current national funding methodology only really looks at the number of properties protected from actual flooding, and we will always lose out under that measure when compared with the, say, the Somerset levels. I think better management of the groundwater flood risk at local level would better quantify impacts such as road closures, disruption to local businesses, deliveries, access to services or education, and normal life in general. That is what Pathfinder is all about, and it's encouraging that DEFRA, and as a result of my introducing it to the Chancellor, the Treasury, are looking at in great detail. I think my constituents know I will not be letting this one drop. Finally, I want to wish all our retailers and businesses a bumper Christmas period. Attending the launch of the Ice Rink and Cathedral Christmas Market last Friday, I'm in no doubt Winchester is the Christmas city. The website, christmasinwinchester.co.uk, is, I am told, receiving record numbers of hits. Indeed, I've lost count of the number of my fellow MPs who tell me they've already purchased tickets to hit the ice on what must be one of the most stunning rinks in the world. As this is my last column of the year, may I wish all Hampshire Chronicle readers a peaceful Christmas and a successful New Year.
First person this week is by Joanna Lewis, and it's read by Jane.
And Joanna Lewis is writing, "Where will this Londonisation end? We are living in uncertain times. The rise of Islamic State, no Bruce on Strictly, and the other week I became a Marxist for 20 minutes. Stuck in Winchester traffic, I found myself opposite a new housing development. Floor-to-ceiling windows exposed floor-to-ceiling chandeliers. There was one of the largest fountains I've seen in a 50-mile radius. This conspicuous display of glitzy, showy wealth seemed out of place. Yes, Hampshire is one of the richest counties in the UK, and long may it continue. But its wealth is usually understated, discreetly lived behind a tall hedge, tasteful, never brash. To add insult to injury, I saw names like Hyde Park. It's ridiculous. If wealthy newcomers want to get out of London, surely it's to live in a historic city. Why erode what attracted them in the first place? Why don't these companies do a little research and find local names? It would take a few minutes to find the surnames of local men killed in World War I. Just go to St. James's Cemetery. Instead, we have Connaught Square. Perhaps new arrivals should do a local knowledge test to help them acclimatise. Is Jane Austen buried in the cathedral? Should Colin Firth have married me? Answer yes to the last, and we'll say no more. I then headed into town to console myself with a pasty, only to find that the shop my family and I love sitting in had been replaced by a chain selling upmarket beauty products. You couldn't miss it. The last time I saw a yellow that putrid, my neighbour's cat had been sick outside my door. Considering the shop is right next to a historic monument, weathered and aged to a pale shade of bone, one wonders how this was allowed. And if I wanted expensive body oil, I could order it online. But try getting a pasty through Amazon Prime. Where will this Londonisation end? Will Silver Hill be renamed New Croydon? It's not locals who want lots of big chain stores to make it feel like Oxford Street. It's the investment funds and commercial property firms who know they can charge huge rents and cream off large percentages. Meanwhile, micro retailers are pushed to the margins. There's a saying in Africa, if you can educate a girl, you educate a family. Likewise, if you allow local retailers to flourish, you support local communities. Small retailers are more likely to use local skilled tradesmen, set up family businesses, and use their businesses as collateral to get on the property ladder. We have exciting local entrepreneurs in plastic tents blocking the high street. Where is the indoor market for Hampshire producers, like Oxford? This absence gets to the heart of what people are realising is wrong with Silver Hill and other developments. Writing as a historian, Winchester has traditionally grown around a strong rural-urban relationship, symbolised by the way buildings are not so tall they obscure the surrounding hills. But the link with the countryside is on the verge of being severed in favour of London. It's going to take a powerful campaign to save the heart and soul of this town, but I think we're ready for it. I'm no revolutionary, but I can't wait to march with Winchester Deserves Better this Saturday.
Now it's editorial comment read by Shirley.
And this one is headed, City Comes Together to Put on a Show. Winchester's growing reputation as one of the places to spend time in at Christmas is good news for everyone. As we report this week, up to 400,000 people are expected to flock to the city centre to partake in what business marketing chiefs are calling the perfect Christmas experience. With its Christmas market, ice rink, shopping, dining, festive lights, panto and more, there really is something for everyone to enjoy. Such is its appeal that something akin to a military exercise is underway to cope with the influx. They include measures to ease traffic and pedestrian congestion, more security staff, CCTV, greeters to meet coach parties, additional park and ride bus services and transport, and parking teams liaising with arrivals via radio networks to advise where remaining spaces can be found. All those who have played a part in putting on and promoting the extravaganza are to be congratulated. They include the Business Improvement District, BID, Winchester Chamber of Commerce, and the much maligned Winchester City Council. The Council should be allowed a moment to share the credit for this success story as it battens down the hatches for the Winchester Deserves Better March this Saturday.
Now it's time for What's On. On Saturday, December the 6th, there is a question and answer session called Understanding Your Energy at St. Lawrence Parish Room, Colebrook Street, Winchester. That's S0239LH. It's from 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon. Refreshments from 10 a.m. And the basic question, is gas or electricity greener? Do you buy energy cost effectively? All your questions are answered. It's free. All are welcome. There is a website, www.winac.org.uk. And if you've still got some energy after that, in the evening, 1,000 Years of Christmas on Saturday, December the 6th of December at 7:30 p.m. This is an enchanting evening of seasonal songs and verses, and it's on at QE2 Theatre, Winchester College, Kingsgate Street, Winchester, SO239PG. Tickets are £15 or £12.50 concessionary, and you can get them from the box office at theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk or ring 01962 840 440. On Saturday, December the 6th, again, there's a madding crowd, and that's on at St. Mary's Church, Kingsworthy, at 7:30 p.m. This is an evening of Christmas music. It's only £7, and it includes seasonal refreshments. And they're a really good group, this, as well. 01962 882217 for tickets and further questions. On Sunday, December the 7th, Christmas concert, United Reformed Church, Romsey, 2:30 p.m, Romsey Ladies Choir with Octavius. In aid of Romsey Cancer Support Centre, it's at Jane Scarth House, £8 on the door, including refreshments, and children are free. On Monday and Tuesday, December the 8th and 9th, is the Mitchell Mersch Silver Band Christmas Concert on at the Plaza Theatre, Winchester Road, Romsey, at 7:30 p.m. Now, going back to Saturday, December the 6th, for the first of a series of Winchester Cathedral concerts, it's the Wayne Fleet Singers Christmas Concert at Winchester Cathedral, 7:30 p.m, and they're doing Handel's Messiah, and the tickets are £39.50 to £12.50. And they can be got from the Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857275, or www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. As indeed can tickets for other events at the Cathedral, and one is on Saturday the 13th of December at 1 p.m, and it's Carols for Advent and Christmas, and this is free admission but a retiring collection. On Sunday the 21st of December at 3:30 p.m, there's an afternoon carol service sung by the Cathedral Choir, especially for shoppers at the Christmas market, and no ticket required for that one. Finally, the 23rd of December, as a Tuesday at 1 p.m, sung by the girl and boy choristers with Francis Kelly on the harp, free admission. It's Britain's Ceremony of Carols, free but a retiring collection. Now we're on to lighting up time. It ends on Friday the 28th of November at 4:53 a.m. and begins at 9:15 p.m. And on Wednesday the 3rd of December, it ends at 4:51 a.m. and begins at 9:19 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it, because sometimes that's all that needs to be done. We're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, the headline is Staff Shortfall Puts Pressure on Service. A recruitment crisis has left Hampshire's ambulance service with a shortfall of more than 250 paramedics. Bosses at South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, admit they are under extreme pressure to answer emergency calls as they struggle to fill 260 vacancies. Mark Ainsworth-Smith, consultant emergency care practitioner for SCAS, revealed that there had been a 25% increase in demand on the trust since 2010, telling an inquest it was difficult to retain staff because of the high cost of living. He said, "We have 260 outstanding vacancies for paramedics. To meet current demand, we need to mobilise basic ambulances. We use third-party ambulances providers to cover shortfalls in ambulances and staff." Mr. Ainsworth-Smith added that it was less attractive career because paramedic training now took longer due to new degree courses, sometimes taking between 2 and 5 years, as opposed to 16 weeks in the past. Last year, private contractors attended 9% of call-outs on behalf of SCAS, but this has since increased to 16%. Contractors use their own vehicles and staff, but some of the equipment is the same as that used by SCAS employees. Mr. Ainsworth-Smith said that the service works with the contracted companies on training and visits, and visits their premises to carry out random checks. Between April 2011 and December 2013, the average wait for an SCAS ambulance from call to arrival was around 30 minutes, with the longest at 38 minutes in December 2012. Martin Berry, executive officer for the Royal College of Paramedics, said the shortage was a national problem that was failing patients with less serious conditions. He added, "Because they're so good at making decisions and diagnosis, they're increasingly being employed in walk-in centres and GP surgeries and for telephone advice services. These jobs are sucking paramedics out of the ambulance sector because they are attractive roles and offer 9-to-5 working hours. Under the NHS constitution, ambulances have to reach the most seriously ill patients within 8 minutes for 75% of calls. And ESCAS figures over the past 3 years reveal that they are meeting that target, dealing with between 76 and 78% of urgent cases within 8 minutes. Royston Smith, who chairs the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority, called for greater teamwork between ambulance and fire services to respond to less serious calls.
And here we have nurses take pay protest to the streets. Members of the Royal College of Nursing, the RCN, have been rallying for support to petition against pay changes. As unison nurses, cleaners, porters and midwives staged a 4-hour strike on Monday, members of the RCN chose a different tactic to gather signatures to support calls for a 1-day percent pay increase. Julie Lewis, senior officer of the RCN, said their members had voted against striking, so instead decided to promote an early day motion. The motion condemns the government's decision to reject a recommendation by the independent pay review body that all NHS staff should receive a pay rise to meet the rising costs of living. "It is to get the pay rise back on the parliamentary agenda," she said. "It's really about the government recognising the pay review body's suggestion, which was 1% across the board. It is not a pay rise as such, just the cost of living is going up, be it food or fuel, and nurses aren't getting anything extra. The change in pay will also mean that NHS pensions will not be reflected in the pay rise, and that any increment will not be taken into account when applying for a loan or mortgage." Ms. Lewis added, "Although it is a good pension, we're having to work more for longer hours to pay more and get less out. Our members are very clear we don't wish to strike, but we feel impassioned to get this straight. Nurses are working to keep the RHCH going, but they're particularly stretched, and I don't think the public fully grasps this." And it is accompanied by a photograph of a cluster of nurses, both male and female, collecting signatures in Winchester High Street, wearing tabards, "The Voice of Nursing."
And this one is headed "Sir Robin in Podium Spot Celebration." Hampshire sailing legend and Clipper Race founder Sir Robin Knox Johnson, 75, was ecstatic to finish the solo transatlantic race Route de Rome, St. Malo to Guadeloupe, taking third place in his class. Sir Robin crossed the line in his open 60 grey power on the 22nd of November after over 20 days at sea. The first man to sail solo, non-stop, around the world in 1968-69 and the oldest competitor in this race, he said he was happy to finish the 3,542-mile French race after the intense pressure for a final podium race. Sorry, place. Sir Robin proved that saving conservatively and taking prime care of his boat proved the winning tactic. The opening hours of the race through the English Channel were in difficult and challenging conditions with heavy headwinds. Many of the skippers suffered damage and some abandoned the race. Sir Robin raced sensibly, although losing wind instruments at this stage meant he had less rest, having to go on deck to check constantly. He gradually reeled in the head of the fleet, some in lighter, more modern boats and easier to manage. Support from friends, family and the public had been fantastic, he said. "It has helped me push on harder than I might otherwise have done." Sir Robin added that he would be back for the next race in 2018 with a smaller boat. And along with the article, we have a wonderful picture of Sir Robin at 75 years of age, indeed looking ecstatic to have won.
Packham joins Badger protest. The TV presenter speaks out against Cull. Naturalist Chris Packham joined more than 100 people in Winchester to march against badger culls being carried out across the country. Carrying banners that read, "End the cruel cull now," people flocked to Abbey Gardens at the Broadway to begin their nearly 2-mile parade as police stopped traffic to let them pass despite the miserable weather. They walked up St George's Street, along Jury Street to City Road and Sussex Street, and back down along the High Street, in spite of the heaving city centre packed with Christmas shoppers. Organiser Anna Dale said, "We have come from all over the country. Some have even come from as far as South Wales and Gloucester. It's the 27th march of its kind in over a year and a half. We disagree with the badger cull because it's against the advice of leading scientists. They have said the main cause of tuberculosis infection is cattle-to-cattle transmission. Culling has ignored public opinion. The most recent vote in Parliament was 219 votes to stop the cull against one. The 213 cull failed to be effective or humane, which means it won't achieve its aim, which was a very modest one anyway. A survey showed that up to 22% of badgers took more than 5 minutes to die." She added, "The government chose to shut down 5 out of 6 of the vaccine projects this country had. It's cheaper to vaccinate badgers than cage, trap and shoot them because you have got all the extra cost of policing and carcass disposal. It costs £10 million in 213, paid for by the taxpayer, and they failed." Mr. Packham said, "I'm very pleased to come here because it's in my own part of the country. I was born in Southampton and now live in the New Forest. We don't have any badger culls in this part of the world, but it's important to reflect the public's view, and it's equally important to do this here as it is anywhere else." And there's a big picture of Chris Packham addressing the crowd, and below that, a lovely pair of two people dressed as badgers, carrying a badger glove puppet each, which says, "I am not guilty" on each of them. And the big banner they're holding says, "Badgers, victims of a government hate campaign."
And here we have doubts linger over new supermarket. Residents left frustrated over Sainsbury's silence. Preparatory work began at the site of a new superstore in Bishop's Waltham last week, but doubts remain as to whether it will be built at all after supermarket bosses announced a cull of new developments. Sainsbury's revealed this month that it is dropping 40 planned supermarkets as sales drop and more cash is poured into smaller convenience branches. The retail giant said schemes which are unlikely to achieve an appropriate return on capital have been scrapped. But it has frustrated residents and councillors by refusing to confirm whether the long-touted Bishop's Waltham store is among them. Diggers moved onto the Abbey Mill site last Wednesday to put up a 2-metre-high perimeter fence screening the area. It comes more than 5 years after the plans first sparked debate on whether a major supermarket would help or hinder the town. Anti-Sainsbury's campaigners said a national chain would wreck the town's high street and independent businesses, while supporters hailed the store as a victory for consumer choice and disabled shoppers who cannot travel. The future of the project is thought to have been decided internally. Civic chiefs and campaigners on both sides are frustrated by the public uncertainty, which also raises questions about how the town's GP service will cope with a rising population and large house-building programme over the next 2 decades. Sainsbury's was set to fund a new 1.6 million GP surgery next to the store as part of the scheme, easing pressure on the current practice. Eric Birkbeck of the pro-Sainsbury's Bishop's Waltham Alternative View Group said, "It's very frustrating. The longer you get that silence, the longer you begin to believe the worst. It's a sort of ill feeling that you have. We would still welcome the store with open arms." A Sainsbury's spokesman said, "In light of the recently announced strategic review, which confirmed that 8 new supermarkets will be developed over the next 3 years, we are in the process of reviewing all of our schemes."
And this one is headed, "Lanterns Transform Cathedral Landscape." Winchester was transformed into a winter wonderland last Friday as children paraded their homemade lanterns through the cathedral grounds. About 2,000 parents and their tots turned out for the lantern parade to celebrate the official opening of this year's Christmas market and ice rink, seeing all manner of Christmas puddings and even a traditional Chinese dragon walking through the close. The glow of the impressive lamps could be seen from far around, marked by the band Funk Lab, who kicked off the opening of the Christmas market, shortly followed by a sing-along with the Marwell Choir. Japanese drummers led the lantern parade before welcoming the dean and the blessing of the Christmas tree. Prizes for best lanterns were handed out by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, before a short fireworks display entertained the crowd. Canon Rowley Ream, Vice Dean of the Cathedral, said, "They are all lovely, and this year we are looking at them in a different place. What I like this year is there is a story about them, and it shows the creativity that is so important. I just like the fact people have the chance to show them off and take part in some special Christmas celebrations." Twins Earl and Mabel Hickey, 6, from Mislingford Road, Swanmore, made Chinese lanterns. Their mum, Colette Sullivan, 44, said, "It was just to give them the chance to make their Christmas wishes." Earl asked Santa for a Meccano set, and Mabel asked for the Magic Faraway Tree book. Thomas Snowden and Johnny Bradshaw, both 9, of Twyford, St Mary's Primary School, made Minions from the popular children's film Despicable Me. Thomas of Queen Street said, "I just like walking through all of it." Johnny, who lives near Twyford Church, said, "We really like the bird. It looks really complicated and it's really colourful. I like seeing what other people have done."
Help put a smile on the face of needy local child this Christmas. The Hampshire Chronicle is once again asking its generous readers to put a smile on the face of a needy local child this Christmas. Last year's appeal was so successful that we are widening our campaign to help 3 Winchester charities this time around. Along with Winchester Basics Bank, 2 other worthy causes, Friends of the Family and Home Start Winchester, will also benefit. The Basics Bank helps families in B&B accommodation, women fleeing domestic violence, the newly unemployed waiting for benefits to start, and people who have found work but are between benefits and benefit ending and wage starting. Home Start Winchester and Districts offers free support to families with at least one child under 5 going through difficult times, which may include loneliness and isolation, coping with twins, triplets or several preschool children, ill health, disability and special needs, relationship difficulties, lone parenting, first-time parenthood and new babies or behavioural problems. And Friends of the Family is a small, independent Winchester-based charity which has offered confidential support to local families in difficulty for 20 years. Among the services it provides is a mums and toddlers group for preschool-aged children when home life is challenging, a dad support group giving confidential help to men with children aged up to 5, and at-home support for families with children aged 5 to 13. Where to donate your presents? The Chronicle has teamed up with the Brooks Centre in Winchester this year, where toys can be left in the Waterston store on the upper shopping level. Please only donate brand new toys suitable for toddlers to children aged up to 13, which should be unwrapped. Closing date for donations is Friday, December the 12th. Presents will be divided between the 3 chosen charities.
Now we have Jack recognised for being a shining star. A little boy who has been battling cancer for 13 months has received an award for his bravery. Jack Jocelyn has received a Little Star Award, which celebrates the courage of children who confront this disease. Now celebrities including Wayne Rooney and singer Emily Sandé are backing the awards run by Cancer Research UK, and are urging people to nominate their little stars in the run-up to Christmas. The 8-year-old from Chandler's Ford has also collected 1,000 coloured beads since he was diagnosed with a brain tumour in August last year, each one representing a medical procedure he has faced, including 12 operations, blood transfusions and chemotherapy. Now in remission, he is still collecting beads as doctors continue to watch his recovery. Jack's mum, Lisa, 43, said, "I'm so proud of Jack. When his treatment is finished, I will be displaying his beads with pride for everyone to see how brave he has been. Jack and all the children who face cancer deserve recognition for what they go through. The Little Star Trophy has lightened up his life. He loves it and it has pride of place in our home." England and Manchester United captain Wayne Rooney said, "As a parent myself, I find it almost impossible to imagine the impact of being told your child has been diagnosed with cancer. Over the years, I've met a lot of youngsters who are undergoing treatment for this horrible disease. Their courage, positivity and determination never fails to humble me, as does that of their parents and families." Relatives and friends of cancer patients or survivors under 18 who deserve special recognition can nominate their little stars for the award. And there is a photograph of little Jack wearing a Cancer Research UK t-shirt and with his 1,000 beads all round his neck and carrying his shining silver star very proudly, with a little insert photograph of Wayne Rooney.
Warning as car fuel thieves strike. Police are on the hunt for thieves who have been drilling holes into cars and stealing fuel. 6 incidents were reported in Kingsworthy from October 19th until November 12th, all overnight. Leslie Worrell's Minnie was targeted twice at her home in Hookpit Farm Lane. The 71-year-old said, "They have taken 2 lots of petrol, about 20 litres in total. The first time we were away, but the second time we were in the house, which is quite disconcerting. There were also 2 incidents in Ramsey Road, one in Fraser Road and one in Wesley Road." Gloria Francis, 68, of Ramsey Road, said her son Stephen's Ford Focus was drained. "They drilled 6 holes into the tank," she said. "I'm furious. I feel sorry for anyone who's had it done, but it just makes you so angry because they're so callous. If it was 1 hole, it might have been repairable, but you can't with 6 holes." It cost the 36-year-old and his family £500 to replace the tank after the incident on November the 6th to the 7th. The warehouse worker said he had to rely on lifts from friends for 10 days whilst it was fixed. "I don't like relying on other people. I like to do things myself. It was an inconvenience. I filled up the night before because I was going to a funeral the day after. It was just below a full tank, so it was probably 35 litres of petrol." He said he now reverses into his parking space but feels nervous about leaving his car there. Another villager, who asked not to be named, said it was not the time of year for this type of crime. They said, "That is so dangerous. One spark and it will go up in flames. It's just mental. They do all sorts of things to get money towards Christmas. The simple solution is to get a job." A Hampshire police spokesman said, "If anyone is aware of any similar incidents in other communities, we would encourage people to call police on 101 or the charity Crime Stoppers on 0800 555111, where information can be left anonymously. Hampshire police say how best to avoid becoming a victim of car fuel thefts. By following these steps, drivers can protect their vehicles. Always park in a well-lit, well-used area. Try to park with your fuel tank facing the road, so passing motorists make it less of a target. Locking fuel caps is not advised, as thieves tend to puncture the tank when these are used, causing even more damage. There are devices available that can be fitted to the fuel cap to activate the vehicle's alarm if the cap is tampered with.
Councillor voices his disdain over cars parked on pavements. And when I see a car parked on the pavement, I want to knock its wing mirror off. This was the statement one councillor used to describe his disdain for poor parking in the Winchester city area centre. At last Wednesday's town forum At last Wednesday's town forum, councillors discussed the new walking strategy, which aims to see fewer cars on city streets. But talk soon turned to pavement parking, which Chairman Councillor Robert Hutchinson said was another issue that the police are not willing to enforce. During a lively discussion, Councillor Ian Tate said, "I hate it when cars park on the pavement because I just want to walk past, break off their wing mirrors and say, 'Oops, I didn't see your car there.'" After a series of noisy comments interrupting his peers on everything from budgets to parking, Councillor Tate was warned by the chairman that he was on a final warning. With that, Councillor Tate promptly flung on his coat and left the room.
And this one is locked up for a good cause. A Winchester woman has been locked up for the night to raise awareness of a charity that helps prevent released prisoners from reoffending. Sarah Chester, who is pictured, 66, spent the night in HMP Portland in Dorset in hopes of raising £10,000 for Footprints, of which she is a patron. "It's going to be a long night," she said beforehand. "I have been involved with ex-prisoners for 18 years. A lot of people are there in prison because they didn't have a hope in hell's chance at the beginning of their life and never had anybody listen to them. Over £5,000 has already been donated. The St Cross resident and regular churchgoer at St Lawrence was locked up from 1 p.m. last Thursday until 8 a.m. the next day, alongside other fundraisers.
Faith is restored in humanity. It wasn't the day Don Raymond was hoping for when he started his journey to Salisbury from Winchester. The 84-year-old hit a pothole on Monday, November 17th, which he says left his car undrivable. Now the Hairstock resident is on the hunt for two men from a nearby garage who swooped in to save him. "They asked if we needed help, took my car to the garage, fixed it and gave my wife and I a cup of tea. When I asked, 'What's the damage?' he wouldn't take a penny from me," Mr. Raymond said. "It's restored my faith in humanity." He said he would like to thank the men from Hampshire Diesel Services in Stockbridge Road.
Children get up close to space. Pupils at Hiltonbury Junior School in Chandler's Ford have been given the chance to enjoy a unique experience of astronomy. Earlier this month, the school hosted a week of classes where the children could get up close and personal with a 1.2 billion year old piece of Mars and a 4.3 billion year old nickel meteorite. The samples of space were provided by the UK's Science and Technology Facilities Council, STFC, and were collected in the 1960s and 70s during some of NASA's first manned space missions. Most of the samples collected are used by scientists in their studies of the moon, but small quantities are used to develop lunar and planetary sciences educational packages. Professor John Womersley, STFC's chief executive officer, said, "This is a great opportunity for young people to be able to see, touch and really experience such important and exciting messengers from space, turning science fiction into science fact. It's an unforgettable experience to be able to hold such an important part of science history that has made such an incredible journey over millions of miles to reach us, and one we hope will inspire the scientists of the future."
And the inaugural Winchester Wine Festival is a sparkling event. It was a weekend of sparkling sweetness, robust Cabernets and sassy Shirazes when the first Winchester Wine Festival was launched. While other parts of the city were awash with Christmas shoppers, 1,500 people opted for the inviting warmth, as well as the alcohol, at the Guildhall. Marking the start of the Christmas market, local connoisseurs Susie Barry and Peter Richards, the world's youngest married master vintners, helped to celebrate a whole host of different wines, as well as local food produce. In a bid to ensure people tried the wide variety, wines were colour-coded according to the flavour and labelled at the stalls. Fresh whites were labelled, "Like it fresh and racy?" while full-bodied reds were, "Are you a big smoothie?" Then there were the more risque variety of sparkling wines, "Let's get physical." Local suppliers, the Naked Grape and Wine Utopia, showcased Brutes, Ports and Rieslings, while Lower Weald producers Hattingley Valley used the opportunity to display some of their award-winning wines. Mr. Richards and his wife have not long completed the Médoc Marathon in Bordeaux to raise money for their friend Michael Cox, a Ropley-based master vintner who died from cancer last year, aged 62. "Wine should be about fun, and that's what the marathon was about for me," Mr. Richards said, "apart from being a bit painful." And there's a photo of a cluster of people with their glasses doing their tasting and their drinking at the wine festival and looking very happy about it.
MPs warning over flood funding rules. Residents carrying out flood prevention work will be left out of pocket by strict funding rules, an MP has warned. But a government minister ducked a challenge to extend the deadline for reclaiming cash from local councils when the issue was raised in Parliament. Meanwhile, other flood-hit Hampshire homes are facing insurance excess demands of up to £25,000, ministers were told. The debate came almost a year after floods struck parts of Winchester, Romsey and Hambledon, after 6 months' worth of rain fell in 2 months. Army and Navy personnel were called in to build flood defences and hand out sandbags as rivers burst their banks, with the total cost to Hampshire County Council put at £68.5 million. Steve Brine, the Winchester MP, raised the alarm in Parliament about householders running out of time when they try to reclaim spending through the Repair and Renew grant. The Conservative MP said that Winchester City Council has approved 44 applications since last year's floods, rejecting only two, and paying out about £45,000. But he urged ministers to think again over the requirement for repair schemes to be completed and the money claimed back from the council by the end of March. Mr. Brine pointed to the example of Littleton, where portable toilets were put up for a long time after floodwater left residents without drainage for many weeks. Appealing for flexibility, he said, "Because of the detailed design work that is required to do this properly, it may not be possible for my constituents to implement the scheme and claim back the costs by the end of March." But in reply, Floods Minister Dan Rogerson said only that his department was reviewing some recovery packages, and his department was considering a county council bid for a 3-year programme of flood alleviation schemes. Mr. Rogerson said officials met with county officials earlier this week to discuss the proposal, and we remain in touch with the council over how we might take it forward. But Mr. Brine urged the government to examine cost-benefit ratios for such schemes, warning that smaller Hampshire villages missed out. and he hailed an Environment Agency worker, a former major in the Pakistani army, for the idea of restricting river flow further upstream by deliberately flooding farmland. Mr. Brine added, "We borrowed a bit of genius from Pakistan that really did save Winchester this year."
A state agent seek a charity to work with. A Winchester estate agent is looking for a worthy charity to be a recipient of fundraising as the agent celebrates its 25th anniversary. Belgarum Estate Agents will focus all of its fundraising throughout 2015 on one local charity. It is calling for all local charities to contact it if they wish to be shortlisted for Belgarum's chosen charity, which will then be decided by staff vote and announced in the new year. Belgarum has in the past raised money for good causes and sponsored many events in Winchester, but now wants to work closely with a local charity to raise significant funds and support for it throughout next year. Belgarum is an independent estate agent established in 1989. Its sales office is based in Upper High Street, Winchester, with a lettings office in Staple Gardens.
I'm afraid concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowling and Kate Butler. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation team. And also, thanks and goodbye to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thanks for you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with a laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.